10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The Go Bucks!
Oh, my God. Oh, goodness. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland, and joining me once again is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, I say this in our intro every year post-trip, but it's a true statement, and I stand by it because we've not had a disappointing one at all. Our trips never, ever, ever disappoint.
We went through them, actually, while we were sitting on a pier that jutted out into Lake Harding, I believe, in eastern Alabama. Trips never disappoint, but I don't think we've stayed in as nice an environment as we did this time. I kept calling it a cabin. That's not the correct term, though, because it was like a really nice house right on this lake that I did not know existed. It was one of the most peaceful and serene settings that I've been to in a very, very long time. Kudos to Brian Slater for his organization.
And we'll get into the details there. But again, like, it wasn't just a quote-unquote lake house. We had, like, endless lake coastline, two boathouses. I mean, it was, like, really impressive.
All the fishing gear you could dream of, Tim. It was awesome.
Right. So we'll get there in a second. Intros, Mike. So, again, it's been about a month since we last chatted, right?
Correct. Yep. This is show number 3, I believe.
Have you missed me?
I haven't seen you in what, 72 hours.
We're going to get to our thoughts on college football 2023 in a bit. How has life been over the course of the past month, Mike, both college football wise and not college football wise?
It's been great. I can't complain. I watched week one. Primarily from the best part, I was in Phoenix for week one. So after one of the most hellacious travel days of all time, I had gone over 50 hours, but sleeping an hour or two and playing golf. It was crazy. So anyway, we woke up in the hotel on Saturday morning and watched Colorado TCU at 9 o'clock. And it was great watching college football from bed. And it's been off to the races there. That was for a Orioles trip in Arizona. The Orioles now, of course, in the American League Division Series. Best record in the American League. Looking forward to that. So can't complain. It's been an exciting year of college football as well, especially for your Knits. They're looking great.
Yeah, and again, we're up. We're on week – is this week 6, Mike?
It is. It's week 6 already.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Anyway, so it's been busy here as always. Kids have stuff going on. Jackson joined life at Penn State. So we're doing the college search thing with Anna somewhat. Again, Leah started high school and Joey's in 7th grade. And just work, which is lovely, Mike. And
work never changes. That's always there.
But anyway, it's been an interesting season so far. We'll jump right in. This is a very broad topic. I have in my mind the answer to this question. What is your high level initial impression of this season, Mike?
It has the most parity of any season that I can remember in a long time.
100%. Yep.
You know, you have Clemson down, you have Alabama a notch down, although still very much in it. Notre Dame's lost a game. So kind of your traditional powerhouses that have lorded over the sport. LSU, with one notable exception, of course, Georgia, although they might be down on the field, they're still undefeated. So it's wide open. I mean, Penn State has a chance to break into the party. USC does. Texas does. Oklahoma does. So it's in this final year, I believe, of the 4-team playoff, it's the most wide open race for the playoff spots that I can remember.
So in my mind, there's a group of at the very top that are either undefeated, and I think they're like perceived as to being the best team, and that would be Georgia, USC, Washington, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. Is Florida State still in that mix, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Florida State has an inside track for one of those playoff spots, in my opinion.
Am I missing anybody in that group?
Oklahoma, if they beat Texas. I, I think you named Texas. There's Red River rivalry this week.
Yeah, Texas.
Yeah, Texas, Oklahoma is going to be a monster game on Saturday.
And I've seen all of these teams play. And we saw Georgia live last weekend, and I think Brian would not disagree. Georgia's a flawed team. I mean, they're undefeated. Auburn's not great shakes, and Auburn could have won that game. Ohio State has serious deficiencies they need to address. USC defense is a problem. Alabama, I mean, to me, glaring issues there. Penn State, while they've looked good offensively, they've taken a step back since last year. My point being, I think if you were going to ask me, we'll get there later too, like the teams that have looked best to me overall, I think I would go Texas and Washington.
Yeah, well, Washington has had a couple games in the last couple weeks where they didn't blow out teams maybe they should have blown out. Washington's offense is just outstanding. Penix is a superstar. We were talking about this on the trip. His accuracy is just something to behold. But I think if you want to look at, I think you'd have to say Texas looks like the most complete team offensively and defensively. That's what I would say. But I would also caution people not to sleep on Bama. And it is funny how the two-time defending national champs with the country's longest winning streak, Georgia Bulldogs, are being kind of overlooked. And I understand why. They have not, you know, their two SEC wins over South Carolina and Auburn have been very, very ho-hum. The SEC is noticeably down this year. So it's all making for a fascinating first quarter of the season.
And I have to say, too, high-level thing, because, like, this is bucking the trend, and I think there's a lot of reasons why this is. We are now, again, we're in week six. This is not a sample of two games or three games or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. To the point you just said, and I know I am a Big Ten person, I think objectively the SEC is not good this year.
If you look at each tier of the SEC, it's a little down as it has been as compared to previous years. So the top teams are not quite as good as they were in previous seasons. Then those middle tier teams, I think, are not quite as good as they have been also, as evidenced by the conference's record in non-conference games. And then, truth be told, they have some very, very bad teams in the SEC this year.
Yeah.
And so I totally agree with you. In the Big Ten, I think you have pretty much the same old, in that there's three outstanding teams at the top, Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. I don't even see a fourth team that's knocking on the door there.
There's nothing.
All the years I can remember, Ohio State has the most vulnerabilities, especially on offense. They looked very, very pedestrian against an Indiana team that's a train wreck. And they beat Notre Dame on the road, which was a huge gutsy win. But it wasn't done in, with lots of style points. So, and then you look at the Pac-12 and its final and season at Swan Song. They have, I think, the collection of the strongest teams. I don't know if they're the strongest at the top, but they have five, six teams: Oregon, Washington, USC, Utah. Washington State, Utah, Oregon State. Utah really needs Cam Rising back, though.
Yeah.
But those teams are all not to be messed with. So it's a fascinating season, and I'm enjoying the parity.
And I will say,
enjoy it, because we have one more year before everybody's in the same two conferences.
So I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing. I think we've all gotten tired of the SEC dominance over the years. And I think what I'm going to talk about now is akin to the NFLization of college football.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Mike, I have this thing where, you know, Americans love to like just be like, oh, we're the most capitalist, blah, 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 in the world or whatever. And the Europeans are all socialist, except when it comes to sports. Okay. In Europe, let's say with soccer, my beloved soccer, it is absolutely the most capitalist cutthroat thing in the world. It's like, there's no salary cap. Like, if you want to buy a player, you just buy the player. You spend as much money as you want, you buy the player, and that's all there is. And if you're the worst, you know, team in the league, you get kicked out of the league.
Yeah.
Here, in our American pro sports, if you're the worst team in the NFL, you get rewarded with a first-round draft pick.
And you get rewarded with, you in most of the sports, revenue sharing. Some revenue money just for being bad.
There's no revenue sharing in the Premier League. Like, you find your own money. Same with college sports, but now, or traditionally, it's been like, you know, the biggest programs have more money, so they dominate. That's just the way it works, right? Well, now the players have more power. and there's NIL and there's a transfer portal. So I think what we're seeing here is kids who are drawn to the allure of the SEC, maybe they're second or third string. They're like, you know what? I know I'm good enough to go start at a Washington or Utah, and they're going. And it's really changing the whole dynamic of the power structure of college football. I just have to think all of those things are playing massively into this. Some schools are way ahead of the game on NIL, and some are way behind the game, including some blue bloods who are really not doing what they need to do. Some, like A&M, are doing it. They have a lot of money, but they're too dumb to figure out how to do it correctly.
Exactly. They're like the old school Washington Commanders.
Yes. So again, I have to think all of these factors are playing into this sudden drop off in what has been by far the most dominant conference in our sport, right?
The irony though is so thick that for the Pac-12, if they just could have waited a couple months, they're getting all the ratings with these Colorado games. USC is a sexy program now with Caleb Williams. They would get that TV money now. They could still easily be a conference if they had just played things a little bit differently. And it's just funny and ironic to see how well they're playing in their final year of existence.
We'll talk more later on this one too. It's great for me to see that they're having this great, amazing year. Probably this is the best year for the Pac-12 since like those early 2000s USC teams with Pete Carroll. The conference was good back then. It was a good conference. And for it to happen now, it's really a shame. And I wish there was a way to dial it back. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
No going back in time.
Most impressive teams of the month, Mike. Again, to me, the most impressive single performance I saw was at week two or week one, Texas-Bama. I thought Texas
two. Two. Yeah, that Texas looked outstanding. And that was because they dominated both lines of scrimmage. You know, they've always had really good skill players, even though I think Quinn Ewers is a notch above what they've had at quarterback in a long time.
Yeah.
They've got the backs, they've got the receivers, but they dominated both lines of scrimmage, and that was something to see in Tuscaloosa.
Anyone else? But you mentioned Washington. Like, anyone else stand out to you? Until last week, I would have thrown USC in there, but their defensive issues are glaring.
There are two other teams that I would say have really stood out to me, and that's Florida State to go on the road and beat Clemson. It was a good Clemson team. It's a good Clemson team, and Clemson played a very, very good game until the very end when they'd had some moronic coaching moves. But I thought that was a huge win. And Florida State, and of course, beating LSU was a nice win, even though LSU looks like garbage since that game. So, but I think Florida State has looked the part. And I have to say Penn State. I mean, I know they haven't played the toughest schedule, but their defense is really looking good. They're doing what they need to on offense. And so I would say those three teams have looked super impressive to me.
I will say, I've told you guys, again, there's issues with the Penn State offense. The wide receiver core is not what it's been. But it is the best defense we've had since the group in 05 with Posluszny and Dan Connor and the rest of them. Like, the defense is, and we are fortunate. We're going to have him for a few more games and he's gone. Manny Diaz is an amazing defensive coordinator. He has those kids ready to play and they love playing for him because he plays like an attacking defense. They get to go out there and just ball out. So I think Penn State has a shot. We shall see. We have a bye week this week and then it's off to Ohio State, Mike, our favorite place to play. Stories of the month, and there will be a lot in the audience who will roll their eyes here. You cannot say that there is a bigger story of this season thus far, even taking into account the past 2 weeks, than what Deion Sanders has done for Colorado football. We were at Colorado, what, like 5 years ago?
2019, yeah, four.
So back then, it was Carl Durrell, I think, was the coach.
I think so.
They were, it's a night, a Friday night game against UCLA. Colorado was terrible. And
the smell of weed just permeated the entire stadium. I'm sure that still happens, but that's really the main thing I can remember.
And nobody cared. And it got worse from there. There's so many elements to this story that fascinate me. He's lost two games in a row. Look, we all agree. They don't have the dudes yet. Deion Sanders, and this is my thing with this whole thing. It's become, of course, a subject of debate. Some people hate it. Some people love it. I look at this as people are misreading what he is and what he does. You cannot deny that anything Deion Sanders has done in his professional life, whether as a player or coach, he's won everything there is to win. He was one of, if not the best, college football player of the 1990s. He went to the NFL. He won, what, two Super Bowls or at least one NFL?
I think he won two.
He played high level, one of the best players in the NFL, while also being an amazing baseball player, which is incredible.
Played in the World Series, at the World Series and an NFL regular season game in the same week.
And then he got into coaching, and there was the whole, like, the Prime Academy thing where it didn't work out very well. But he goes to Jackson State. He took them from the bottom to the top in 3 years. And I think people look at him like, oh, this is all about PR and flash and, like, whatever, money and stuff. But it's like, no. And I told you guys, I was listening to this guy, Bobby Carpenter, on Sirius XM, who I think his time with the Cowboys overlapped with Deion Sanders. But you hear it too from, like, his old baseball managers, his old football coaches, his teammates. Like, no, like, there's a lot of flash there. Yeah. And he loves being the center of attention. But the reason why Deion Sanders was great is because he worked his ass off. He was the first guy in the building, the last guy out. And I think what makes that clear to me is, A, the way he talks to his players, whether good times or bad. He's got this star recruit, Cormani, something other, I can't like his last name, but it's like he's not playing. And Deion's like, well, he's not doing the work, so he ain't going to play. But also, it's like, you know, Deion will talk trash on coaches he kind of does not respect. But do you know who he respects clearly more than anybody else in college football?
Saban.
Nick Saban. He holds Nick Saban in the absolute highest regard. And the reason is simple. Nick Saban wins. Deion Sanders values winners, and winners should do it the right way. This is all a long way of saying, despite all the coverage on this thing, all of like the controversy and turning over the roster, all this kind of stuff, they're going to be lucky to finish 500 this year. I think a bowl game would be a massive achievement for Deion Sanders, given their roster limitations and also losing to Travis Hunter, their best player.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
I have no doubt in 3 years, they're going to be a force. There's no way they're not going to be, Mike. And that's my take on it. I'm wondering what you think about it.
Well, I have a couple things to say about that. Yes, there is one way they won't be a force in 3 years, and that is if Deion is not there. There are going to be a lot of people coming after Deion, including probably people in the NFL. And I wouldn't be surprised if he went to the NFL.
Yeah.
Number two, I echo everything you said. And a person who I really respect as a broadcaster, John Smoltz, who's just a fantastic analyst for Fox on Major League Baseball. I heard him talking about Deion, what he was like as a teammate, because they were teammates on the Braves. Nothing but great things to say about him. And Smoltz wouldn't say that if it wasn't true.
Yeah.
Now, two other quick things. The Colorado TCU game that I watched from my hotel bed in Phoenix. God, that was a glorious set way to start a Saturday. One of the most entertaining games I've seen in a long, long time. But I came away from that game thinking, wow, Colorado has some legit skill players. There's no doubt about it. But TCU is just not as good as we thought they were going into the season.
No.
And they're 3-2 now. And so that loss or that win doesn't look quite as big. Then they go on and beat Nebraska, who's a dumpster in dumpster fire. They're a train wreck. Then they play a very, very mediocre group of five Colorado State team that played their asses off, went to overtime. So I don't know that the results have quite lived up to the hype, but I agree basically with everything that you're saying about the way, I mean, he's a showman and he's an excellent coach. Oh, one more thing. One reason I think he respects Saban a lot as well is they make a lot of money together doing Aflac commercials.
Yes. Yes.
You can't put that past Deion, why he always brings up Saban in interviews. But otherwise, overall, he's done a fantastic job. And imagine if you went to Colorado. Last year was your freshman year. You're 1-11 under
yes.
Carl Durrell. And there's no one at the football games. And you're thinking you're going to have 4 years of just Indiana-level football. So I know exactly what they're in for. And then you see this game day and Fox –
both there at the same time doing their pregame shows. I mean, I'll have more to say about that later too, but
it's
what a boon for the university.
Absolutely. So yeah, what an awesome, what's the name of the AD again? I'm blanking on his name. Is it
Rick George?
Rick George. Great. Look, a risky hire for a lot of reasons, because people were like, this guy was in, you know, what's that level? Is that 1AA down there?
It's 1AA.
Big jump, and like he came in and he kicked out half the players, or more than half the players. But you cannot say, look, if they go 3-8 at this point, 3-9, it's still better than last year.
Yeah. Oh God, it's definitely already way better than last year. That's no doubt.
So anyway, besides that, I think the drop of the SEC is a major storyline. The rise of the Pac-12 in their last year is a major storyline. Coaches doing dumb things continues, Mike.
That'll go on for the end of time.
We have our text chain for our college football group, and it's like, I tell you guys, it's like, you know, the reality is like these guys are like, you can be a really good football coach and a really dumb person. There's a lot of those in football, and that continues. And then also too, just the general ever shifting landscape of college football and where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years is fascinating to me.
I have one more negative storyline for this season I'd like to add before we move on to positive things. The decline of College Game Day.
No, that's later in the show, Mike.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to jump the gun because it has been stark.
Stark and depressing, and I'm very angry about it. All right. Most impressive players of the month. I think you mentioned earlier, Michael Penix, amazing so far.
Yeah, Quinn Ewers, I think, for Texas. Shadeer Sanders has been incredible. It's a shame that Travis Hunter got hurt. He was great, too. Jordan Travis and that Florida State receiver, Keon Coleman, has been that duo has been tremendous, too. Those have been some of the players that I've seen that have, you know, stood out to me.
Yeah, again, same with parity with, like, teams. I think it's also a fascinating year where it's like, you know, you can make a list of 10 guys who still have a chance to win the Heisman at this point. I feel like there's no one that's like separated themselves completely. Right.
During the first quarter of the Colorado TCU game, I jumped on to my FanDuel account and put a couple bucks on Travis Hunter to win the Heisman. I think it was, he was plus 10,000 at that point. And, yeah. I really think that if he had continued playing both ways and hadn't gotten hurt, he would have had a great chance to at least make it to New York.
Yes, because the number of plays he was playing,
yeah,
both sides of the ball, he would have had incredible stats. And on him as well, I'm sure you saw too, like the kid who hit him from Colorado State, that was a dirty hit. It was. And there was so much animus towards that Colorado State kid. And there was like, of course, everyone's dumb. And there was like death threats and all this kind of shit. Who squashed that, Mike? Deion Sanders.
Yeah, him. Travis Hunter.
And then Travis Hunter like went and like just like they made up and it's fine.
Yeah, it was a very classy move.
It'll be a fascinating Heisman race. Biggest flops of the month, Mike. Can I say it again? SEC. But to me, the most embarrassing storyline for the past several years in college football, and you might know what I'm thinking of here. Maybe you don't. I'll give you a hint. Has nepotism ever been good for a college football program, Mike?
I think you're going Iowa.
This Brian Ferentz story, I am sorry. Look, I'm sure he makes a ton of money. Of course, you're not going to quit that job when you still have it. It is embarrassing what they've allowed Iowa, who every year fields an amazing defense and an amazing special teams unit. For how many years now have they had not even like a, they haven't had an average offense.
No, it's not even a serviceable offense.
But Penn State beat them like what, 31-0 or something like that. And part of that was Penn State's defense, but also you watch Iowa, like they are incapable of doing anything.
And they had 76 yards that game. And Tim, what was the play disparity?
97-33, which I think was the biggest in 50 years or something like that.
Iowa had, well, I believe they had 4 first downs the whole game. It's humiliating. And I blame the Iowa athletic director. He restructured things so So Brian Ferentz, the OC, reports directly to him and not to his father. The whole thing is just a mess. I mean, do these guys think that that it's a public university and a statewide football program? They think it's just they're the equivalent of people who take their dogs to the park and just take them off the leash and let them run wild because they think it's just their park.
And again, I put my Iowa fans really kind of hate us Penn State fans for whatever reason. I kind of enjoy it's a kind of an organic rivalry that developed over time. But I feel sincerely bad for those Iowa fans. Like, because I remember back in the day, you know, Jay Paterno was our OC for a while, and it was not a great time.
Jeff Bowden at Florida State. Remember Jeff that? Bowden. That's basically what got Bobby pushed out to retirement.
And it's like, if you're the AD or the president, that's one thing. If you're Kirk Ferentz, like what? You're not doing your son a service. You're not.
No, and you're ruining your own legacy and your son's legacy in coaching. It's maybe they're too close to the situation to see what's going on, but it's embarrassing is the only word for it.
Anything else for biggest flops, Mike? I mean, I think Brian Ferentz stands out, but
I think LSU has got to be up there. They wilted in the second half against Florida State, but then people were chalking that up to Florida State being better than others thought. Then they had a very close game against Arkansas, who's been horrible. And Tim, we watched much of their performance against Ole Miss on Saturday. They gave up over 700 yards to Ole Miss, the most in the SEC in 20-something years, I believe it was. Again, the word embarrassment, they're taking a major, major step back in Brian Kelly's second year.
And again, Lane Kiffin, I think he's an offensive genius. He truly is, right? But 700 some yards.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Mike, best games of the month. And again, I'm going to bore people with this. I do think it's almost like the number, 9.5 million people watched a 10 o'clock kick between Colorado and Colorado State. That speaks volumes.
Yeah.
And most of us stayed up to watch it until it was over like 1:30 in the morning or something like
that. It was 1:30 or 2, and that was one of the rare times though everybody stayed up. I was texting all you guys and I was getting responses. It was crazy.
And then you mentioned Notre Dame Ohio State was a great game too.
Thrilling ending. It was a tough, hard-nosed, hard-fought ball game, and you know, credit to Notre Dame there Ohio State there at the end. How about Notre Dame having only 10 guys on the field for the last two plays? You know, I've always wondered how that doesn't happen more, especially in a frenzied situation where there's only, you know, one play left, the clock is rolling down, and you're sitting on the sideline. It's hard to see how many people are in there. I don't know. I'm not, you know, I've never played football or coached it, but I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often.
Right. Beyond that, like, again, I was telling before, it's like, you know, the season's a blur at this point. We're at week six, and it's like, there's been some great games. I remember sitting down just watching them, but like nothing that stands out as like a true classic besides.
Yeah, Clemson, Florida State was a great game as well. Very well played from the start to the finish.
All right, Mike. We didn't do our trip, by the way. I totally skipped that.
Well, go do it now.
You want to do it now or do you want to go do it at the end?
Let's just touch on it now. And then you want to play the audio at the end?
I think we'll do a tease here, Mike. We'll finish the rest of these topics and then keep the podcast, because people care about the podcast trip. So like we'll keep it at the end. All right.
All right. You run the ship.
All right, here we go. So I'm doing the AP top 25. By the way, a very noticeable, very short list of others receiving votes. A very small list here, Mike. Who do you think has one vote? The last one in others receiving votes.
LSU.
Colorado. Kansas with 3. Clemson with 5. Cousin Dave's West Virginia with 5. Wisconsin with 6. Air Force 7. Tulane 8. UCLA 19. A&M with 31. Maryland with 81. They're the first one out, Mike. And then
surprising. Noted listener Brian Schlater and I really thought that the Terps would crack their way into the top 25 this year or this week because they're playing Ohio State, and Fox really probably wanted, you know, that little number 25 next to Maryland's name when they go into Columbus. So I'm surprised they didn't squeak in.
So I've seen a little bit of Maryland, not a lot. Okay.
Me too. I haven't seen a ton.
I'm just throwing this out here. I'd value your opinion here. They've got Ohio State this week, right?
Correct.
Is it at Maryland?
No, it's in Columbus.
Ugh. Next week, Ohio State has Penn State.
Right, but the Buckeyes are coming off a bye.
Ah, Maryland is are they undefeated or no?
Yeah, they're undefeated. They're 5-0.
Am I crazy to think again? This Ohio State team has not looked. They're not vintage Ohio State. They aren't.
No, especially on offense.
I'm only saying, if the first, what time is the kick? A very important data point here.
Noon.
Important. There's going to be a kind of initially undercurrent of grumpiness among the Ohio State fans who we all know are just like the most notoriously unhappy fans and just joyless anyway. They don't like how things are going. Maryland comes in here. Right. There'll be this nervousness like, oh, what if they keep it close? It affects our ranking. What if at the end of the first quarter, it's like 3-0 Ohio State or 3-0 Maryland? And then the nervousness creeps into the state. We've all been there before at our team's home games. Where it's like, oh, what's going on here? And got this first year starter at Ohio State.
I haven't.
I'm just throwing it out there. The noon kick is a thing. It is a thing for real. Am I being crazy? Am I being too hopeful here, Mike?
No. And I'll have more to say about this game coming up in a later segment.
25 Louisville, 24 Fresno State, 23 LSU. Do they deserve to be 23?
No, they deserve to not even close to the top 25.
Ugh. 22 Tennessee, 21 Missouri, 20 Kentucky. Yeah. I saw someone post today, also undefeated. Stoops there. That's the best job in the country.
Kentucky?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Low expectations. The fans love him. He's got job security. Like, 8 wins, you're good to go. Right?
Is there anything better than low expectations?
No, that's – if you and I were coaches, that's our job, Mike.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no doubt about it. I love low expectations. Two quick points on that, on those first couple teams that you read. Louisville sitting there at 5-0. They're playing Notre Dame either this week or next. I can't remember. Amazing what Jeff Brohm in his first year has, how he's turned that program around. They played a hell of a game against Indiana. That was the only game the Hoosiers have been competitive, but it was a very entertaining game. So I'm impressed with Louisville. And you were talking about games of the year so far. Missouri's win over Kansas State, in which their kicker hit a 60-plus yarder to win it at the buzzer.
Yes,
that was an amazing game that we saw in September as well. So kudos to those Tigers.
It's a good pull. That was a great game. Great game. And for the coach to trust the kicker with a 61-yard field goal?
Yeah. He must have been making them, and he's been making at least some of them in practice.
19 Duke. I love to see Duke up there. 18 our beloved Utah, 17 Miami, 16 Ole Miss in my mind needs to be a little higher, 16 Oregon State.
So what a opportunity Duke had. They beat Clemson to start the season. They're undefeated. Game day comes calling. Notre Dame comes calling. The first half is tough. They're down 13-0. They come storming back. They missed a few kicks, which always will come back to bite you. But then not only do they lose the game at the very end, but their quarterback, their outstanding quarterback, Riley Leonard, gets hurt. It could have been kind of a program-changing win for Duke, but instead, it's just another loss. But they've been a fun little story this year as well.
14 UNC, a fun team. I watched them once or twice. They're good to watch. 13 Wazoo. We'll get to them later. 12 Oklahoma. 11 Alabama. 11.
You know what? I think Alabama's a little underrated. So they lose at home to a Texas team that now people are starting to agree might be one of the best teams in the country. Since then, they've turned it around, and they've, they had a very lackluster performance against USF. That's what really set off alarm bells. But in handling Ole Miss and Mississippi State the last 2 weeks, I mean, I have a feeling they're just going to keep getting better and better and better. And this is an Alabama team that can, I really think, legitimately kind of, fly under the radar a little bit. So keep your eye on Bama.
10 Notre Dame, 9, and then we get to the top here. From 9-1, to me, it's a big group of all the same. 9 USC, 8 Oregon, 7 Washington, 6 Penn State, 5 Florida State, 4 Ohio State, 3 Texas, 2 Michigan, 1 Georgia. As far as first place votes, Florida State gets 4, Ohio State 1, Texas 10, Michigan 12, Georgia 35. All due respect to our good friend and Notre listener Brian Slater, I don't think Georgia deserves to be the number one team in the country at this point. Again, we saw them live last week. They looked anemic to me. And a lack of explosive plays. Like,
definitely a lack of explosive plays. I mean, their best player is a tight end, so that's a situation. But I disagree that they shouldn't be number one. I mean, they have the nation's longest winning streak. They're the two-time defending champs. They're undefeated. What else do you want from them?
But again, the winning streak extends to last year, and that's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. Right, because half those players are on the Eagles now, but I still subscribe to that theory.
All right, on this point, I know it's unfair. It's early in the season. Your best guess, off the top of your head, who's in the playoff this year?
I'm going to go with Penn State, Florida State, Texas, and Alabama.
I've got Florida State. I do have Georgia based mostly on their league not being great. I've got Michigan, and I've got Washington.
Interesting. That would be a, either one of those would be really fun playoffs.
Yeah. Again, a long way to go. Long way to go. Mike, this, okay, now we're going to transition to some more high level stuff. We mentioned the Pac, I'll combine these things. The Pac-12 story to me, it is very, very sad to me. We've discussed this in the last podcast. You know, as a kid grew up in the Midwest, it was a real thing to tune into a 3:30 Pac-12 game and see that those gorgeous sunny skies out there when I'm sitting in my house in Solon, Ohio, and it's like 35 and rainy in November, and it's like, oh my God, that looks lovely. And like, it was like the glamorous league. It was so great. So great. And I just hate that the league is going to be going away, which is a transition into your earlier point. What has happened to College Game Day? And especially in the past couple of weeks, I will once again, probably.
What's happened? Go ahead. Go ahead. Do you want to start, or do you want me to?
I'm going to start with one particular data point on College Game Day, and we'll go from there. What I always loved about College Game Day, in comparison to those awful NFL pregame shows, I remember talking about this. Like, you would turn into that off. Was it CBS with like Terry Bradshaw and like all those guys?
Fox with Terry Bradshaw.
And the dumb robots. It was like, it was so trashy. And like, why are you laughing all the time? There's nothing to laugh at.
The like, fake laughter is endemic.
Just give me an analysis on this whole, I want serious analysis of football, right? And for whatever reason, game day being, for a time, I think you would not agree, like, one of the greatest live shows in television. It was so good in its prime. Right. Mm-hmm. It has devolved into everything I hated about those NFL shows. And I am sorry. I'm sorry to out fans out there who like Pat McAfee. He is an awful addition to the show. He can't help but make it all about him when it's not about him. His antics are just like, it's stupid. And I'm sorry. Trashy, okay. And his comments and his ongoing battle with Washington State, whose fan base is going through I'll say it's in a football term, a traumatic experience, what's happening to their program, right? That flag has been there for how many years now, Mike? I think 10 years, every single week, that fan base is there. And for him to disparage them on air, and then to keep it going on even after the fact, it's like, I don't care about Pat McAfee. He's just trash. Why are everyone else on that set putting up with this crap? The show sucks. I don't watch it anymore. It's unwatchable. Unfortunately, Big Ten, Big Noon Kickoff is following the same path. Yeah. I watched the Big Ten Network show with like Jerry DiNardo.
That's more your demographic. That's more your demographic.
But also, it's like, I want actual, and they have Urban Meyer on there, like giving actual analysis. So again, I'm rambling here. The McAfee, like, it really pisses me off because, like, again, Washington State, they're left out in the cold. They have like no future. And for him to like just like dump gasoline on them and light it on fire and to disparage those people who are making an effort every single week to get that flag out there, it's so disrespectful to me. If I'm those people, and I know the guy who runs that whole program, the old Crimson program that like organizes someone's going to be there every single week and how much work that he puts in for that. I don't know. Am I being overdramatic here, Mike? To me, it's just like it's so unseemly. It's like Pat McAfee does not understand college football. Put him on NFL or put him on pro wrestling or MMA. Right.
So that's you're getting to, you've made a lot of points, and I think the one that really resonates to me is that he can't help but make it be about himself, and that's who he is. Like that's what his show is. He's in the WWF. I mean, he is. And he's in the part of the sports media, the ESPN sports media, that's the part with, you know, Stephen A. Smith yelling at people and Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharpe. Like, that's who he is. So that's what he's going to do on that show. The question is, why did ESPN feel like they had to move him to that? They gave him hundreds of millions of dollars to move his show onto ESPN, and they're making a lot of high-profile firings at the same time they're paying him hundreds of millions of dollars. They have made a calculation that he had, you know, whether you like it or not, Tim, he has an audience. That audience is not diehard college football fans like you. They decided to move him and change their entire show because they made a calculation that that would give them higher ratings. They didn't care that it would alienate the diehard college football fans, the Tims and the Mikes, who have been with them for years. It's just like they didn't care that they're breaking up the Pac-12 and that they're crushing these in-state rivalries. It is just one more rung of the NFLization of the sport we love, college football, by the two networks, Fox and ESPN, that are pulling all the strings. So we've seen that conference realignment. We've seen we've seen conference realignment. We've seen the transfer portal. That's maybe not done by the networks, but we've seen the expansion of the playoff, which is all these things are really making college football into a mini NFL. And the networks have made a calculation based on the fact that their job is to make as much money as possible, that making the NFL, making college football into a mini NFL will make them more money, and it makes everybody more money. And that's the way they're doing it. And that is what I think is at the root of this Pat McAfee to College Game Day. What's sad about it is, you're right, is how it's affected Reese and Desmond Howard and Kirk, who have to then adjust their personalities to fit with this guy who's making it all about him. And the fake laughter is just unwatchable. Yeah. And it is exactly a symptom of what rots the NFL pregame shows. And it's sad not to watch game day or not to be able to enjoy game day. And then you have Fox, which I've attempted to watch a few times, and their strategy is to do exactly the same thing that ESPN is doing. It might be a little better for here and there, but it's sad. I mean, you still have Lee, 88 years old, up there doing the best he can. God bless him, putting on the mascot head. That's a little, you know, 30 seconds of nostalgia where we get to remember the way things used to be. But the show is it's just a shadow of its old self, in my opinion.
I mean, what would Fowler think if he was still there?
Well, he's still at ESPN. He does the college football, you know, play-by-play. And look, we have the utmost respect for Reese Davis, and I disagree with you a little bit. I don't think it's really like personal with McAfee. He's not for me, but he is who he is. He's not trying to be someone that he's not. The ESPN people have looked at him. They've seen what he does. They've seen that, and they've decided to move him and to let him take over that show. He's been enabled.
It's awful. I often have this fantasy of being at a politics press conference with some of my less favorite politicians, and like just being a reporter one time and being like, what's it like to live a voice devoid of integrity? I'm just curious. Like, and I would ask the same question to Pat McAfee. It's like, okay, this is all an act. I'm sorry. Like, this is, you can't be this person with your stupid belt buckle and like put on a shirt and a jacket, please. Like,
it's a character. It's a character.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Anyway,
and so I heard Neuheisel and Chris Childers. They should have be the host of College Game Day, by the way. I heard them talking about this very, very briefly. Maybe I might have been 2 weeks ago. I can't remember when I heard it. And Neuheisel, who is somewhat political in the way he speaks because he's a member of the media, you know, and he's on CBS's various shows. He talked about how Game Day was popular because it was a reflection of college football. And you had people on it who clearly revered college football. You know, Corso before his stroke, Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollack, Desmond Fowler, Reese Davis, whoever it was, Tom Rinaldi, the Bear, Geno, Maria Taylor, all these people, two-thirds of them are gone now. They revered college football. And it's quite clear that McAfee just doesn't revere. He doesn't revere college football. He's an entertainer. And he could be on any forum, and he would, as you said, make it about him. So I think that's really what's so unfortunate about it.
And again, the Game Day thing is one thing, but again, for big noon, what is it, big noon kickoff or big noon tip?
Yeah.
For them to they clearly are following the same model. It's like,
yeah.
What? Why?
Because both those networks are doing the same thing for, you know, one's consolidating all of college football into the Big Ten, one's consolidating into the SEC. They are kind of the two puppeteers behind the scenes who are running college football.
So Mike, how much are we sounding like very grumpy old men at this point?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also earlier you saw the analogy I used about people who let their dogs off in public parks. As you know, I got it. My beloved Adley, my pooch here about 3 weeks ago. And, yeah, that's bothering me lately.
It really is a major offense. It's like, come on, like, don't do that.
It's not your yard.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on before we disparage before we get into other old people rants.
One last thing. Remember we were at the tailgate this weekend and we were talking about the commercials of like, don't be like your parents or whatever. Like this.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Rick.
Yeah. I love those commercials. Anyway. We'll skip looking ahead and we'll go straight to the trip. And I apologize for missing this at the top of the show. So as listeners who follow me on Instagram or whatever that may know, we spent last weekend on a lovely trip to go see the Georgia at Auburn game. We flew into Atlanta on Thursday afternoon, stayed at noted listener Ryan Tozier's house with his wife, lovely Lori. They happen to live, 10 minutes from the Braves Stadium, Mike?
Yeah.
I have to spend some time on this because you told me we were driving there. I was like, oh, the idea of a stadium in the suburbs. I was like, oh, I don't want this. This is like so like not me. And you're like, oh, it's actually pretty cool or whatever. I have to give the Braves ownership credit. They built from scratch something that actually felt like an actual neighborhood next to a stadium. It was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you know going in that the as you said, the town, the area was created out of nothing. When you hear that, you brace for the worst, right? We've seen these kind of districts. There's one near the Philly Stadium. There's one near the Texas Rangers Stadium. They're all chains. It all looks the same. It has not an ounce of authenticity to it. There's plenty of chains. There's plenty of annoying things about, you know, in the Battery, as they call it. But they gave it a great feel where they gave it a feel like, wow, something's definitely happening down here. There are a lot of choices, some of them local. Rod took us to a distillery somebody he knows started. There's a lot of cool places there. And then with the stadium itself, the ballpark, I thought it was awesome. That history place, or like they have like a mini Braves Hall of Fame behind home plate. It's like going to a museum. You could spend half an hour walking around looking at all that memorabilia. They have Babe Ruth's jersey from the Boston Braves days. Doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that the Braves consistently field a great team. So I agree. They did a fantastic job. And hopefully, I'm back down there in a couple of weeks for Game 2 of the World Series Orioles at Braves.
It was. I mean, the Braves game. Like I was like, oh, it's fine. I'll go to a baseball game. I really enjoyed it. So that was great. We hung out there in the morning with. Ryan and Lurie and talked about their dog Watson for a while. That was interesting.
For a long while.
Then we were on the road. And again, Brian, because Auburn, the town, as we'll get to in a second, is essentially an intersection with nothing else there. Hard to find a hotel room in Auburn. So Brian pivoted and found this again, it's not a lake house. It's a lake estate. It was like a
No, it's not to an estate level. So it was a 3-bedroom house. But it's a beautiful house. Like, the bathrooms were really nice. The kitchen was great. All the furniture was really, really nice. It was immaculately decorated. So to call it a cabin is not correct, but I would not call it a state either.
But the amount of land we had access to, like,
yeah,
we had the whole place to ourselves, right?
Yeah, I didn't see one other person there except for the people who owned it.
So that was fun. And then we got up relatively early on Saturday morning. It was, 40 minutes or so to Auburn?
Tim, what did I do when I woke up, though?
Oh, you told us at, 1:30 in the morning, the night before, you were going to go kayaking. So they had kayaks for us there. I'm like, Mike, don't go. You're going to drown. I don't want you to kayak. And I heard you getting up at, what time was that? 6:30?
Something like that.
And you did kayak. Because good for you, Mike.
It was delightful. And you caught some fish, too. I think that should be on the record.
Caught some fish. It was very nice. Drove to Auburn. It's really it was similar to driving to Corvallis. There's a lot of single roads and you're kind of a minor highway. And then you get off an exit and then it's just oh, there's Auburn out of nowhere. And we're driving into campus and it's okay, where are we parked now? And we we pulled up next to, it said, I think it was the agriculture lot.
Kinesiology.
And we asked that guy, oh, can we park here? He's like, yeah, sure. So we just pulled in this lot. He tried to park us next to a dumpster, which was not great.
I still think he just pocketed our $40. I'm not sure he ever gave that money to the university, but he was a nice guy.
We had a decent spot. We had hung out for our tailgate was so depressingly really, really bad.
We had 2 kitchen chairs, a computer, 2 styrofoam coolers, and a $10 disposable grill from Walmart.
Again, against my objections, listeners, Brian and Mike took literal kitchen chairs from the kitchen table from the cabin and put them in the car for the tailgate. And our table was our styrofoam cooler, or one of them.
I thought we did more with less.
And then our television with my laptop, which I will say was an impressive bring, Mike, right? We could watch football there for a little bit.
Absolutely.
Then we ventured to, we wanted to be there. You wanted to be there for the whole War Eagle thing.
It was awesome.
The approach to the stadium. We love an approach to the stadium. High quality. The band was there. We saw the little march on with the band. There's a little hangout plaza area. We had a couple beers there. Went into the stadium.
Well, we saw a guy puking on the walk in too.
There was that. Impressive facade, like a nice facade for a stadium. Jordan Hare, very impressive. That first glimpse when you walk into the stadium is very important. Beautiful optics. Beautiful optics. We found our seats.
Very beautiful optics.
I have to give credit. Auburn fans were, man, they were into it.
They were
into it.
I later heard that we saw Frank Thomas be honored on the field, I think, during the first quarter. I also heard that Charles Barkley and Cam Newton were at the game, too.
Very nice. So we spent the first quarter or the first half in that one seat. We had our way down, and then we went into the quote-unquote town of Auburn. Again, Mike, I had heard via Brian that it was a small town. It's a small town.
Yeah, it's a very small town. Seeing Toomer's Corner and the trees was a big thrill for me.
Yeah, that was cool. But Toomer's Corner is the town.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And big problem there, as many places. So there were lots of people tailgating all throughout campus. They had awesome tailgates. A lot of people don't even go in for the game. They just watch the game. Huge delay on the television feed vis-a-vis hearing the crowd cheer at the stadium. Feels like in the year 2023, we should find a way to improve on that.
So then we did that. And then this is the biggest sign of – and you and I left this to Brian. It was his decision.
He was driving.
It was late in the game, and it was a tight game. So we were still at that one pizzeria/bar place or whatever. We're like, Brian, okay, do you want to sit here and watch the rest of the game? Or would you rather start walking back to the parking lot to get out of here before the traffic? And Brian was like, I would hate traffic more than watching us lose this game or whatever. So he's like,
I hate traffic more than I love anything, basically, is what it boiled down to.
And I was like internally cheering. I'm like, perfect. We're out of here. So we heard the game end on the radio on our beloved Sirius XM, and then we're back at the house for a nice evening, just chilling out. I will say that one other thing. I had thought that Auburn would be a lot further from Atlanta than it was. It was like 2 hours, I think.
Yeah, it's essentially like Clemson, but in the other direction.
Good way to put it.
Quick addendum. That was not the end of the weekend for Brian and I. When we woke up early, drove to the Atlanta airport, flew home. You took a train home. We drove directly to Camden Yards and watched the Orioles, went to the Orioles' final regular season game. So that was quite a weekend, quite a 4 days.
Did you see the entire game, Mike, or no?
No, of course not. Brian was driving. We left in the bottom of the seventh. Orioles were getting smacked anyway, and I was very, very happy to get home. But it was, and I'll be doing the exact same trip to the T, basically, this weekend when I go to Clemson, including a lake house, including grilling steaks and potatoes, including tailgating, including going to a Clemson game, including waking up, driving straight to the airport, and then flying home and going right to the Orioles game on Sunday.
Again, I love our trip so much. The worst part is that no matter what time it is, the driving to the airport Sunday morning is just like, oh.
It's quite often at an ungodly hour after three very hard days of partying, and there's just no way around that.
I will say I was very impressed by the efficiency of the Atlanta airport, Mike.
Yeah, you hit it. You were very, very lucky because we did not have to taxi for 45 minutes when we landed while I waited for an open gate.
Yes. Anyway, so I will say this. I know you hate ranking the trips, so I'm gonna be very transparent here. I'm going to rank our trips right now in my mind. Number one will always be Ole Miss for me. It was the first and just the best. Number two, Oregon State. And number three, Auburn for me.
Interesting. Yeah, as you said, I'm not gonna rank the trips, but I loved Auburn's.
Last thing real quick. I was just at the gym before this to clear my head from my horrible job. But I saw a friend of mine who had just been down to the Ole Miss LSU game last weekend at Ole Miss. And I prepped him. I was like, oh, dude, like, do this. Like, there's this. He walks up and he's like, dude, as advertised. I'm like, yeah, right? And it's so funny. He's from up here. Like, he's not been to a lot of or any games in the South. And he's like, Tim, I figured out why. He's like, no cars. I'm like, yeah, Paul. That's it. So if anyone's listening, like, if you have to prioritize a trip, go to Ole Miss, please. There's nothing like it. Mike, well, this was fun.
Let's do our locks of the week, Tim.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, let me recap last show. It's funny looking back a month ago, you took Utah State plus 25 against Iowa.
Ugh.
Brilliant pick. No, they covered. How is Iowa going to beat anyone by 25? So you won. I took LSU minus 2.5 against Florida State. That was a tough loss. So I'm 0-1. You're 1-0.
My God. This weekend is Oklahoma, Texas?
Oh, yeah. It's Oklahoma, Texas. It's Kentucky, Georgia. It's Maryland, Ohio State. These are all battles of undefeateds.
I'm tempted to take Maryland in the points. Don't even tell me the spreads on these games or whatever. Like, Maryland's attractive to me, but it's Maryland, right? You know, like don't go there. without knowing the spread, I'll take Oklahoma, whatever it is.
That Oklahoma is getting 6.5. Texas favored by 6.5. So you'll take the Sooners?
100%.
Bobby hit the bumper. For this week's Lock of the Week, Tim, you were talking about it. We're going to Columbus, Ohio. The Buckeyes will be looking ahead to Penn State next week. But plus, it's a 19.5 point spread against Maryland's offense. Even if Ohio State is blowing them out, I see a backdoor cover. I'm definitely taking the Terps plus the 19.5.
Mike, I get the allure there. But it's Maryland.
Say no more. By the way, we didn't somehow get to the news that Indiana fired its offensive coordinator, Walt Bell, in midseason. That is a desperation move.
Oh, wait. Twitter is unreliable, as we all know. Did it happen, like, when he just had a baby or something like that? His wife had a baby?
I don't know the details behind that.
Look that up. I think it may have actually, he may have been fired on the day his wife gave birth to a child. That could have happened.
I will look that up. That'll be in our next podcast. It'll be in roughly a month. We'll do it before the November games, and we'll look back on this month. Also coming up at the end of this show, right, we're going to play the audio that we recorded in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Yes, that'll be so you can hear from us, and also you'll hear from Nota listener Ryan Tozier on the origins of Tozier-ing.
Oh, that's right. So you should have teased that at the beginning of the podcast.
One last thing, Mike. Again, any thoughts on a possibility of how about Bama at A&M, 3:30 kick? Bama or A&M win here?
It's going to be a very, very close game. I could see A&M winning, but I'm still going to take Bama.
Okay. Mike, your plans this weekend?
I'll be going to Clemson. I don't even have to tell you my plans because they're exact replica of the plans that, or of the trip that we just did, including the presence of Tozier and Zarch and Laurie and Watson. Just a few other guys will be there, substitute Clemson, Wake Forest for Auburn and Georgia. And you'll know exactly what I'll be doing.
Do the Tozers get tired of your presence at all?
Oh my God, no. I don't know. You have to ask them. I'm guessing now. They call me Mike Unger Tozier.
What if Lori's just too polite as a Southern woman to like just tell you like not to come anymore? Like it's possible, right?
Well, if that's the case, she'll never be able to tell me, and I'll never stop coming.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. There's one thing to say, Mike.
Pachas.
All right, Mike. Here we are in Smyrna, Georgia, with noted celebrity Ryan Tozier. Ryan, good to see you. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for hosting us. We appreciate it a lot. And we are headed to tomorrow, or today we're headed to near Auburn, Alabama, for the Auburn-Georgia game tomorrow.
What's it called? West Point Lake?
West Point Lake. 2:30 local time kick tomorrow. Brian, how are you feeling about the game?
I am very confident in Georgia's going to prevail.
That's noted listener Brian Schlater. He slept for 14 hours and he's still not feeling on the top of his game.
And last night we had a wonderful evening at the Braves game. I must say I was blown away. What's it called? Battery Park? Is that what it's called?
The Battery.
The Battery. A lovely place to see a ball game.
Yeah.
Very impressed by the neighborhood. Is it a neighborhood you would call?
It's not. It's like an invention.
It's an invention.
A creation out of thin air. But the ballpark itself is awesome. And that part behind home plate where they have all the Braves history is very, very impressive.
Memorabilia?
So, yeah. Memorabilia, yes. So, Ryan, you've been listening to the podcast for...
Whenever it starts.
Whenever it started.
Inception, yeah.
Yes.
Inception.
So it's great to see you. I have to get your thoughts on Clemson.
You know, Clemson is okay. But
that's very insightful.
Dabo has made some mistakes recently, not really kept up with the times. I think they're still a good program, but maybe the best days are behind us. I don't know.
Well, you had a lot of national championships. It does remind me of yesterday. I was with noted listener Brian Schlater, and I was asking him who the main running back for Georgia is, and he said, well, that's the problem. We don't have a main running back. And I was like, problem? You have the nation's longest winning streak and you won back-to-back national titles. There are no problems.
So, Ryan, you've been living down here in Atlanta for how long?
Since 98.
Okay. Just describe, I guess, the college football atmosphere down here. The milieu of different fans and whatnot.
Yeah, so football Saturdays in the fall, I mean, people all have their loyalties. People are traveling to games. College football rules down here more so than NFL, MLB.
More than the Falcons?
More than the Falcons, yeah. So it is wild, and everyone has their loyalties.
So I'm guessing Georgia, of course, is the biggest population of fans down here. Like, how would you break down the next, like, several groups?
I would say Auburn's probably number two.
Yeah.
Then you got a fair amount of Alabama, Tennessee.
All Southern.
Yeah, yeah.
How about Indiana?
Not a lot of Indiana, no. Maryland.
No?
No.
How do folks down here feel about the Big Ten Conference? Great conference, Ryan.
Not as passionate about the Big Ten down here as some other parts, yeah.
The
a topic, lot of Iowa fans here.
A lot of Iowa fans, yeah.
Do they think that the Big Ten plays an exciting brand of football?
Not necessarily.
So the important topic we have to discuss is, so if I'm typing, this morning I was telling my wife, like, I'm at Ryan Tozier's house. And as I was typing Tozier, the auto thing was doing Tozier-ing. Like, so you were the inventor of Tozier-ing. Do you recall the first time you Tozier-ed something?
So back when I had a job where I was an auditor, I used to travel around, but, you know, was broke, basically. And so I was like, ooh, where I'm traveling to this city, so I got to go see the stadium. So that's kind of how it went. I didn't go inside. I just saw the venue.
And how do you feel about the fact that now you've coined a term, an actual word in the English language that people who don't know you use to describe what an actual Tozering is? Yeah. It's impressive.
One of my proudest moments.
Yeah, that's going in your first paragraph of your obituary.
For sure.
And for people who don't know, Tozering is the art of going to see a stadium, just not going inside.
That's correct. Right. That's right. Yeah.
And we had a very intense debate last night about what the parameters were for an actual Tozering. Like, so we decided from the air does not count.
No, that's a different. All these things need different words. I mean, that you could call that an aerial Tozering. Which there's I did a great anyone who Daniel Christie, actually noted listener, had a great picture. He aerial Tozered the Carrier Dome. It was a good one. I remember him sending that photo.
I think where I landed last night thinking of this, like, and how to define it, it has to be an intentional action to go see a stadium.
Absolutely.
So that rules out flying over, because you're not like, I'm not going to say I'm going to catch this flight just to, like, see the top of the
Right. That's a good point. And of course, if you go into the stadium and go on a tour or just walk into it, that's no longer a Tozering.
Right. So anyway, Ryan, thanks again for having us, man. It was great seeing you. We had a great time last night.
Yeah, I had such a good time. I think I'm going to come back next week.
You should. You should.
All right, see ya.
That was fun.
That was great. Good.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit IntelligentCollegeFootball.com.